woke up this morning with the sun down shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, I'm up at Stacks and Jacks. That's time always Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 57. Actually, 55. NASDAQ Futures up 234. Dow Futures up 315 as we try and bounce back really totally from yesterday's huge sell-off after the Paul Janet Yellen testimony in front of Congress. And we were up 100 NASDAQ points, and we must have turned around 400 points, 500 points, and those guys were speaking. So, and I think, Wayne, how are you, buddy?
Well, I'm still here.
Well, that's a good thing. You're still down in Florida?
Yeah, I'm still in Florida. Here this morning, basking away in a nice temperate 45 degrees. This is a cold snap for this place.
Do you guys at least all have heat?
We do have heat.
I'm just saying, you know. But you can get away. You get away with a heat pump, though, right? You don't need a furnace.
No. Everybody here has heat. They mostly have heat pumps. Well, with a combination air conditioner heat pumps, yeah.
Do you need an air conditioner with a heat pump?
It's the same unit.
It's the same unit, right?
Yep.
Because actually some of the people here in Chicago, if you're going to build a new home right now, some of the places are recommending that you get a big heat pump like you guys, because I guess they're more efficient, and that you have a furnace for the days when it's under 30 some degrees, and then you turn the furnace on to get it to that level, and then you turn your heat pump on or something. Different thing. So anywho, how have you been with all this crazy stuff going on? You have, of course, you must miss Washington with all this stuff happening.
After seeing these reports about how these members of Congress are at each other's throats, calling each other, you know, names, mostly, this is all on the Republican side now, between them. I used to cover Congress when, you know, both I'd be invited into both parties, the Congress members' offices, and you know, there was a conviviality there that I don't think really exists there today. Now I guess if you're a reporter and you were seen with somebody, a member of Congress, then some other member of Congress might say, "Look, I'm not going to give you any more interviews because I saw you with so and so the other day." You know, that's disgusting.
Well, we had a gentleman before he quit, Illinois state legislator. Matt Murphy, I've never heard that name, but Matt was like the number two or three guy. He came on the show relatively frequently, and I asked him one day. I said, I think there's more of a friendly atmosphere in Illinois, as crazy as it is. But he said, a lot of the Democrats are way more fun. These Republicans aren't any fun, even though he was a Republican. You know, he goes, yeah, there's some good guys on the other side. I'd rather hang out with them. What's the difference? It is. How do you keep up this kind of hatred like all day long? It's like it's like John Wayne and the Searchers, for God's sake. You know, how do you keep the hate face on for 4-hour movie?
You know, You know what it is? Is a lot of these real far right Republicans. I'm talking about the Gosars, Taylor Greens, the Boberts. They I don't know, where do they find time to actually represent their districts? What are they doing on behalf of their constituents? It seems like all they're trying to do is cater to the these far right internet websites, get good play there and on Fox News, and I just wonder what, you know, I would suggest to anyone who runs against them next year to pose the question, what have you done for the district? In Marjorie Taylor Greene's case, I understand she doesn't even have constituent offices for, you know, doing things like getting a flag to drape over a coffin for a veteran. You know, these are the types of things that members of Congress, they may not like to do it, but it's part of their job. And I don't see these, the Matt Gaetzes. I mean, when's he ever in his district? It seems like he's out trying. One day he's out in Wyoming trying to badmouth Liz Cheney, and the next moment he's in Southern California with Marjorie Taylor Greene trying to grift money off the wealthy Republicans of Orange County. I don't know.
Well, what's when you say that though? I mean, I'm the extreme. You know, it's weird when I'm sort of in the middle on this. Not sort of. I kind of am, and I see a tremendous similarities in the actions between the far right and the far left. I mean, the way they behave themselves, they're both nuts.
Well, the thing is, even the, you talk about far left or the progressive caucus in Congress, at least I see them talking about what they're doing for their constituents, whether they're submitting legislation, sitting on committees and being engaged in the markups and trying to get something in for, now I'm not talking about getting a new post office bill. Basically what they're trying to do is salvage the postal system from the idiot who's running it now, the Trumper who wants to destroy it. In the past there have been, members of the left that have probably haven't they seem to be running more for national office than doing anything for constituents. But this crowd, Gosar, this guy in the wheelchair, Madison Cawthorn. I mean, he's always quoting Adolf Hitler. You just wonder that what's in these people's minds, if anything, maybe nothing.
Well, brings up an interesting question. We've talked on the show a few times. Actually, I have some very specific things to ask you today, which I don't normally, because I just like to roll with what you want to talk about. But we've been talking a lot lately. There seems to be somewhat of a divide, and Carl brings this up, and Carl evidently backed a conservative guy in Florida, and he ends up winning. This is for a representative spot, and he gets to the weekend away where they teach you how to be a representative, right? And they had some big issue about the guy's cell phone, and if you didn't use one of their issue cell phones, where they could tell like who the hell you called and everything, that you couldn't get any committee assignments or anything. And after one or two terms, this guy said basically the hell with this. And I guess my question is, when you mentioned that about offices and constituents, what exactly does a first year, even if your party's allegedly in power, like the Democrats, what is the first year guy on either side of the aisle? What do you do all day? But anyway, the story seemed to be that there's a huge amount of turnover in Congress in the first 1, 2, 3, 4 terms when people feel they're just not doing anything and they just get the hell out of there. Then once you're in there kind of for a while, you sort of jump over, almost use the term Rubicon, you jump over this river, and now you're sort of in, and you're taking money from the right people, and you're in the in crowd, like on either side of the aisle. Is that a fair approximation of the way it is? See, the people that are there, one or two, because I went to one of those, actually two, of the...
Yeah, Somebody who actually had an exploratory committee once, when I was thinking about running for U.S. House seat. The minute you if you're a first termer, then the fact of life is you're going to be looking at getting campaign contributions for your very next election. That will happen the day after you're declared the winner. That's Machiavellian, and that's what that happens. But the other thing you do is you start to do outreach, not only to members of your own party. You're going to try to get on committees or subcommittees that actually get some press, especially in your own district. So if you're, say, representing rural Nebraska, you're going to want to get on the agriculture committee and subcommittees, because that's going to have a direct impact on your constituents. Now, keep in mind, there'll be other rural state members of Congress that are going to be first termers trying to get on that same committee. So there's a lot of jockeying going on there. And then you want to make sure that you have a constituent office that, you know, it's not the job of a member of the House, certainly, to fix the potholes in the street, but you've got to have people to direct those requests to the right people, because that's what the people expect. They don't really know that that's not your job, but you have to be able to do it. And I got this from people who, you know, were staffers and, you know, telling me, look, if you're going to be successful in defeating this guy, and you do defeat him, this is what you've got to do. So you've got to have outreach people for veterans, for the elderly, for, you know, the social security checks don't arrive, all this kind of stuff. So it's a big job. Now, some people, they don't like the politics, and I think after January 6th, a lot of people are saying, geez, I don't want to go through that again. I don't want to be working in a war zone. So I think that's playing a part in some people deciding to hang it up, even after 15 terms in some cases.
Well, you have that kind of going on, but I think there's some people, especially if you're a, you know, sometimes somebody runs and they're, I don't know what year you were when you were talking about this, but I mean, if I ran, I don't have 8 or 10 years to sit on my ass and wait to get on the right committee. I mean, okay, I get on the agriculture committee. They come out with a bill every 5 years, right? I mean, it's how are you going to be considered doing it? I mean, people are going to want you to, you know, people expect you to bring world peace to the table. I mean, and you're not going to do that your first term. I mean, when does anybody?
Well, that's where you got to try to develop mentorships with other longer serving members, and we see that especially in the Senate. Where you'll get some older war horse there, and then, you know, you have a junior senator, and they'll try to, you know, cozy up to the old timers. And there's another issue, and this is especially true in the Senate more than the House, but I was told by a former senator who recently passed away. He said, let me tell you something about the Senate. 100 members, one of the most exclusive clubs in the world. And every morning when those members wake up and look at themselves in the bathroom mirror, they're all looking at the next president of the United States. So you got that going too, because, where do you go from the Senate? You usually don't go from Senate to governorship. It mostly goes the other way.
Is the Senate considered a bigger job than a governor? Or are they both kind of even, or does it depend on the state?
I'm sorry, what's
is a senator considered a bigger job than a governor, or does it depend on the state?
Senate, you, depends on what, of course, what state. But yeah, senators are considered more, you're in this kind of exclusive club. Now, yeah, there's 100 senators, 50 governors. So, but, you know, let's face it, if you're in the Senate, you're probably got a lot more clout than, say, the governor of Rhode Island or the governor of Hawaii. Most people don't even see them. You know, they're never on the Sunday morning talk shows, but senators are, because they're readily available and they're involved in something that the national press is interested in usually.
I have to ask you this, Wayne, because I don't know. I read something a long time ago regarding the British system of government versus ours. I mean, a parliamentary system, and a lot of it came down to when you flip a person, a new prime minister, he has something like, you know, some minimal amount of people resign. It's like 20 or 30 or something, maybe 50. But when we flip a party with a president, don't something like 1,500 people resign? I mean, the undersecretary of states of like every part of the world, and it's a massive, massive list. Is that something we should be proud of?
These are jobs that are they're in something called the plum book. So you get a new administration, you get all the people working on a campaign to go through the plum book to see, ooh, what. You know, I take this job here, you know, and usually they get it if they've done, either they've donated enough money to the campaign or they've worked enough on the campaign. So you get people like, going for ambassadorships, tertiary levels in government agencies and departments. And, when you get a change of administration, all these people are expected to submit their resignations.
Well, you know, you get the idea that, you know, of course, they have their warts as well, and I don't know if I'd trade systems, but that in Britain, you know, the guy who's the Secretary of State for, Undersecretary of State, whatever their department is for South America, is some guy that, you know, went to Foreign Service School, speaks three languages. I mean, it doesn't mean he's good or bad. It just means, you know, he's a professional, quote, at that job. He's not just some, you know, you just don't replace him with some hack from a campaign. And, well, I guess where I'm leading to with this is, I don't know which president it started with, but you probably will know, all of a sudden Congresses are now making it really tough for a new president coming in to get all these people appointed, to the point where there's, you know, 1,000 names. I mean, is that efficient at all? I mean, it seems to me to be, this guy's almost 2 years in to be, you know, almost year and a half, and they're talking about he's short 400 people or something. I mean, how the hell does that even work? Or else you don't need the people in the first place. Well, maybe that's it.
It used to be worse than that in the U.S., where we had the spoil system. And, of course, President Garfield is the one who instituted civil service reform. And he was shot and killed for it because some guy that expected a good job didn't get it. Charles Guiteau waited for President Garfield at the train station and walked right up behind him and shot him. Teddy Roosevelt did a lot more to do reform civil service. Then we have the Hatch Act, which the Trump administration really violated en masse. The Republican convention being held in the White House was probably the grossest example of a violation of the Hatch Act. And now in Britain, they have what's called permanent secretaries in departments. And anyone who likes British comedy may have seen a show called Yes Minister, where you've got the permanent secretary, but then you've got the minister who's a member of the prime minister's party. And, of course, it's the permanent secretary that's running the show. And the minister, they come and go.
Okay, so that's sort of like... Now, let's pick one that's close to Xi's. I don't think he's been approved yet, but the Ram father is going to Tokyo, right? He's going to be the ambassador of Japan? Rahm Emanuel?
Oh, I'm sorry about Emanuel. Yeah, he's... there was some consternation about his being nominated, because the one thing that many people would not say about Rahm Emanuel, the one word you wouldn't use to describe him is diplomat. His nomination, I know, rubbed some people the wrong way, and then other people said, look, haven't we done enough to the Japanese, you know, two atom bombs, and now Rahm Emanuel. But I think that, I'm not sure that his nomination has yet cleared the...
I don't think it has. Yeah. I just was, you could also dig into the part where, what was the tape of the one shooting maybe they held back on, and Anita Alvarez lost her job over it. Now he's going to be the ambassador to Japan, right? Which is interesting.
Laquan McDonald, I believe.
Yeah, Laquan McDonald. But now, yeah. Well, now, okay, so say he gets approved. He lands over there, he plunks his fanny in the big seat. What does he do all day other than try and do business for his family and his brother, which he's pretty good at? I mean, what do you, I mean, they obviously don't need the guy. He hasn't been there for a year and a half. I mean, so what, that post has been vacant for a year and a half?
It's not, the job isn't as good as it used to be. With one thing that's happened with COVID, a lot of those fancy receptions that you go to, the free dinners, they're not doing that, especially in Japan. You saw how Japan reacted to the Omicron. Oh my God! Omicron. Mutation. They basically said no foreigners are allowed into Japan. So they really take that stuff seriously, because of course they were one of the first hit with COVID from the cruise ship that docked there. But it's be an ambassador. It's a lot of meetings. You're also working with your own country's Chamber of Commerce. So the U.S.-Japanese Chamber of Commerce is going to take up a lot of your time. You're representing U.S. business as much as you are the president. But anymore, you get to use that title ambassador for the rest of your life, which in some cases, I've got so many people who will become ambassadors. I just shudder to have to call these people ambassador. And I guess I would include Rob. Can you imagine Ambassador Emmanuel?
Oh yeah. I was in the Economic Club of Chicago for a while, and I went to some of the dinners, and I'd get there, and they have the stand up cocktail party type of thing. So you kind of go find a spot where you can lean. So I go over to, and somebody came by, and it was the a lady from the I think it was the Chinese embassy. All right, so you've got a major embassy. Well, I assume they still do it, or Trump booted them out. I don't know. That you have a major Chinese embassy in, let's say, Washington, I would guess. Now, how many satellite embassies do they have? They obviously have one here.
Usually the consulates. Yeah, they're consulate generals or the consulates. I guess it was last year they closed the Chinese consulate general in Houston and told them to get out, but maybe it was 2 years ago.
Well, it was pretty interesting because I talked to her for a little bit, and of course, everybody is working the room, especially her. I mean, she knew everybody. I didn't know anybody. She gives me her card, and I started talking to some guy, and he was talking about one of his places that he supplied had moved over to China, and now he was going to have to set up a Chinese operation just so he was closer to the guy he supplied. And it wasn't like he wanted to move over there, or at least that's what he claimed. So I sort of set, I gave him her card, basically, and he called me back, and he said, thank you very much, blah, blah, blah. And it turns out, that's what they did. If Wayne wanted to put up a place over there, they'd set you up with somebody, usually some pal. I mean, it's just actually got pretty nasty in my mind, because what I always do is try and read between the lines. And they, essentially, they, depending on your business and where your people you're supplying, your reason for being there, they would essentially set you up with a spot in an area. You would have your, lack of a better term, a political liaison that would make sure that you didn't have any union problems or union or anything like that, that they would, they would find somebody to build a place for you and put it together. And I guess they have to be, 51% of the place over there or something? But I mean, they would take you pretty much from cradle to grave on this thing. And I was pretty surprised. I guess maybe I wasn't surprised. I was surprised, but I shouldn't have been. I guess I'll return it to that way. They pretty much, and this is all done out of, the consulate here in Chicago. I mean, do they have, 10 of those things or 5? It's a big operation.
Yeah, I don't know how many we've closed some. I know we closed the Chinese consulate general in Houston down. We expelled the consulate general for Russia, and they got kicked out of San Francisco. And I guess Biden has kicked out a few more recently. But that brings up the other issue. A lot of the embassies and consulates, one of the other missions, the one that you don't really read about until the FBI busts, a ring of them, that's the espionage aspect, because they've got intelligence agents working out of these missions, and we do too. So one of the things Rahm Emanuel, I would imagine if he has any personality, his first personality conflict at the embassy in Tokyo will probably be with the CIA station chief, and because in some cases they're the ones who say, you know, think in their own minds. Although you may not know, you don't know they're the CIA station chief. They think in their own minds, I'm running this outfit here. And herein you get the, you remember, the movie, The Ugly American,
yeah,
where Marlon Brando is the new ambassador. And he, that's what he faces in this this fictitious country he arrives in, to be the ambassador. He's told, hey, you know, that's not the way we do things here. This is the way we do things here.
We gotta go to break, Wayne. SP Futures up 59, NASDAQ Futures up 238. Trying to make back all of yesterday. Maybe it's transitory, might be back in. We'll find out. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. It's Brad Weber on the board. S&P Futures up 60, 60 and a quarter actually. NASDAQ Futures up 239. That's a lot. Dow Futures up 347. We're really trying to come back. Now yesterday we talked about there was nothing in the up in the Dow. Now everything's up except for Salesforce, which is down $18. It was down 29 last night as they clunked on their earnings. The only other thing down today is the VIX index, down 354, still 2365. I mean, it's hundreds of points up and down every day is that doesn't exactly give people warm feelings about the market. Although it's warmer today than yesterday, that's for sure. DAX up 263, 1.7%. FTSE up 102, 1.5. CAC around up 115, 1.7. It's hard to imagine whatever was wrong with yesterday, being the COVID, being, oh, by the way, yeah, we forget transitory on inflation, and listen to Janet Yellen stammer about how this whole new bill is paid for, which is no third grade would believe that. It's hard to imagine the bounce back here today, other than maybe the Fed's buying, who knows. And it's still their biggest charge now, I think, is to keep the market up, even though they won't admit that. Nikkei up 113.4%, Shanghai up 13.4%, Hang Seng making somewhat of a bounce back, 183 up 0.8%, but none of these guys, except for the Shanghai, are bounced back what they were yesterday. This is a review. Dow's down 652, S&P down 88, NASDAQ down 245. When I say the futures are making their whole way back, the futures kind of inched back after the close of being only down in the 60s, and they're back up basically 60. So even though the cash was down 88, the futures were only down 60 by the time it all ended. So I'm always talking futures, which might not match up with some of these cash numbers. A 10-year up 3 basis points to 1.47. Bund only up 1 basis point to minus 0.32. Japan up 1 basis point to positive 0.07. Oil, a little bit of a bounce back finally, up $3 though, but still 69.20. Long way from the 84, we're going to go to 100 talk of about 2 weeks ago. Brent up 3.32, 72.50. Natural gas down 14 cents, 4.42. This is the biggest drop, just down 25% from the $6 number a couple weeks ago. And we're heading into winter. This is like unheard of. RBOB 198, which is unchanged, under $2. Wow. It was sleeping all day yesterday. Gold up 1090 to 1787. Still in that high 1700 range. It gets above 18 once in a while and gets slapped right back. Silver up 4 cents, 2280. Copper up 4 cents, 431. Matter of fact, gold was up huge yesterday. And when some of these comments came, the GDX, which is the gold miners index, which I have some people in, it was up a dollar and finished down like 40 cents, which is a huge move in that thing. Crypto. We've got Bitcoin down 197 to 57,282. It's kind of lost in this 57 to 59 range, at least for the last couple of weeks. Maddie, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a crash on the Bishop Ford. This is on the inbound side just before 130th Street, which is exit 68. That crash is blocking the right lane, and it's causing a congestion coming inbound on I-94 from the south side. No issues on the Ryan, I-57, or the Stevenson right now. We're starting to see some traffic build on the Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower and Kennedy. Edens is all quiet. Lakeshore Drive's looking good in both directions. Weather today, some rain early, and then we'll have a nice pleasant day for December 1st. Rain in the forecast early, but a high of 49 and some sunshine later on. Right now it's overcast and 43 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 84 today. Right now it's clear and 51. In sports, quiet night last night. Our local teams were off. Bulls are back in action in New York City tomorrow to take on the Knicks. Suns played a battle of 1 and 2 in the NBA power rankings, and it was the Suns beating the Warriors 104-96. Blackhawks were off as well. They're in Washington tomorrow to take on the Capitals. Coyotes played. They lost to the Wild 5-2. College hoops, the Big Ten ACC Challenge. Night 2 last night saw Northwestern lose at Wake Forest in a back-and-forth game, 77-73. But the Big Ten is dominating the ACC through two nights, leading 6-2, six wins to two losses. There's six more games to go tonight as they wrap up that annual series. Chief.
The pretty interesting testimony yesterday, Wayne, on the two. I'm so stunned that we have those two people in those jobs. I can't even. I know you're on the liberal side, but explain to me exactly how somebody leaves the Fed chairman job, immediately gets paid $7 million from the people she was supposed to regulate without raising a friggin' eyebrow, and then goes back and gets the job as the Secretary of the Treasury. I mean, do we have any moral left in this country? Is there a shred of one?
yeah, morals and ethics in the United States today, I think, are a rare commodity.
I mean, she is so compromised, I can't even listen to her. And then yesterday she was talking about, and she was arguing with the one senator, because the senator was quoting her from a few years ago. And you can tell when she gets visibly upset. I love it. She's like grandma getting pissed off at you. And, he quoted her from like 5 years ago about something that was going to pay for itself. And of course it didn't. And now she was adamant that this new, not just the infrastructure program, the social, the social one that's coming up or whatever, the one from $3.5 trillion down to one something or whatever. I don't even know what they're calling that bill. Well, I suppose I should know what they're calling it, but.
Yeah, is that the Build Back Better, or is that the.
Yeah, that's right.
When they have a problem with branding these initiatives, because when people get lost in the acronyms and the abbreviations, you've got a sales problem.
Well, yeah, but she's talking about how, I mean, and here's a lady who's supposed to be our chief economist, for God's sake. I mean, as you know, I'm a in terms of political bent, I'm in the middle, but in terms of fiscal bent, I'm about as conservative as they get. I mean, I'm a monetarist. I had Milton Friedman for class. I mean, that's where I come from. That's where I'm always going to be. And you know, and inflation is always a monetary phenomenon every single time. And these guys, they're in denial of that totally. And she started talking, ranting about some program where they were going to educate people and there'd be more educated people and that was going to bring down inflation. I mean, what is she talking about?
I'll tell you where I live, where people are going to see it. You know, that a lot of people, they shop at this Dollar Tree, which everything in there is a dollar, but they're now going to raise their prices up to at least $1.25. And, you know, people feel that. A lot of people here in Florida, of course, retirees are on fixed income. You know, they're either on Social Security or a small pension. And they feel that bite when prices go up in the supermarket and the other stores.
I got a kind of a quick story to tell regarding the dollar stores, right? I don't necessarily shop there, but there's none around me. But, I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't or anything like that. We were trying to, I met this guy in Cleveland, and he was a broker with a firm that kind of his own spot. And Ohioans are so different than anybody else. I mean, it's scary. I mean, he was a broker, but he was also a financial advisor. But you take your Ohio people from cradle to grave. I mean, here in Chicago, you know, I'll get the piece of their portfolio they want to protect or something like that, but they always got other places. And, I mean, people in the Midwest are just that way. But there, he had this big conference room. And if you were my client, you wouldn't think of not asking me who you should use for like an estate attorney or something. And they would meet in the office and, you know, he wouldn't be part of the lawyer piece, but they trusted him to know everybody in every walk of life that they dealt with financially. You know, which, I guess is an honor, but I would never dream of telling somebody, you know, where they should go buy an annuity. It's just not my game. But there are those guys, you know, I got an annuity guy. Anyway, we take this bike trip on this canal down to, Akron. And Ohio's different than Illinois because of the highest point in the state really is in Akron. And water runs both north and south because Lake Erie's a lot lower than Lake Michigan. And, anyway, we take this trip. And he says, I got a guy I want you to meet on the other end. And of course, we're all sweaty from biking. This big, good looking, well dressed black guy comes in. He sits down and immediately, you know, somebody, you just like the guy. And he's in this business of supplying the dollar stores. And I am fascinated, of course. I'm like, all right, you got to tell me, how the hell do you make money on something that you sell these guys that they can sell for a buck? I mean, when you think about it, it's almost mind-boggling. And he goes, well, see, he had a little, some kind of special soap where he said, you're only going to use like once or twice a year. The last thing you need is a big bottle of stuff, which you get in a supermarket. We sell this bottle size. And he goes, this is an example. I said, okay, what's their markup? He goes, their markup's like, 50% damn near. So you got to get it to them for like 50 cents, you know, at their door, which is, you know, that's a challenge. And he goes, oh yeah, I get the cap I get from Mexico, that's 3 cents. The bottle we get from Canada, and that's like 7 cents. The stuff in the inside, I mean, we buy, you know, a 55-gallon drum, which is like 90 bazillion of these bottles. And then, the seal is another penny. You know, and the label is a penny. He goes, yeah, we can get it out the door for, you know, whatever, 10 cents, and it takes us 20 cents to get there. We make 20 cents or 25 cents. And I'm sitting there going, only in America, right, Wayne? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it's when you think about it, how the hell? It's like when you go buy a, I don't know if you like, I mean, I'm not a connoisseur of anything, but if you go somewhere and the wine guy says, hey, I got this terrific bottle of, you know, Australian red for like $12 and it's a 92 square. I'm sitting there, how the hell does some guy grow grapes in Australia, squeeze the damn things, put them in a bottle, get it over here. This guy makes money on it, and I'm getting it for $12. I mean, I'm not like I want it to be 50. I just don't know how they do it.
Well, you're right. I wonder about Trader Joe's with their $2.99 wine, you know, bottles of wine. They call it $3 Chuck because it's Charles Shaw. It's a good wine from California, but apparently they take a bite on the wine to get their shoppers who go there to get that wine, and they're buying the other stuff, which is there's a tremendous markup on. So they're, you know, they're making out in the long run, but taking it in the shorts on the wine, but they can, they're making money on it.
Well, they somehow they are. Well, it used to be $2, Chuck. Well, that's easy enough to go to $3, Chuck, or $4. But now, what's the dollar store going to do? Dollar and some change?
I think they're changing their name to Dollar Tree Plus.
Really?
And it's the plus that's going to get you.
Well, you know, shall we say, on the south side, what do they used to call the Electra 225, Manny or Wayne? The big Buick. Deuce and some change.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah. That was good. A deuce and some change. All right, so Wayne, so you're saying that the people that, at the rate he's going, by the time the guy's in there 2 years, he's still going to have 100 people that are not appointed. Do they just not even need these people, or what do they do?
Well, you've got a problem with the Senate that confirms nominees. They're holding up a lot of them. A lot of people for jobs abroad, in the State Department, and the two major people doing that, it's Josh Hawley from Missouri, Ted Cruz, I should also mention Tom Cotton from Arkansas, and they're just trying to, I don't know why they want this country to fail, but when you don't have people in critical positions, especially overseas jobs, that's going to bite us when it comes to national security. We really can't exist with that many vacancies. And they're just doing that. They're not doing it because the nominees are a problem. They don't like the person. You just want to disrupt. And let's see how that, they all have future presidential ambitions. So let's see how that comes.
Well, Wayne, if you could, I know you have you. What side of the aisle you like to be on, and doesn't make you bad. But as a factual question, when did that start? I mean, I know the Republicans didn't like Obama a little bit, so they did it to him a little bit. But did the Democrats do it to Bush too, or no?
They did, but it was for particular people. Like, let's take John Bolton, who was Bush nominated to be ambassador to the United Nations. Now, here's a guy who had, in the past, suggested that the top 10 floors of the UN Secretariat building be blown up, demolished. not the best person to be sending as the ambassador to the UN. So they did. Eventually, Bush had to give him a recess appointment, so they waited for the Senate to not be in session, and Bush went ahead and gave him a recess appointment, and John Bolton was never the confirmed ambassador to the United Nations.
All right, back up. What is a recess appointment for? I've heard of it. I don't know specifically what it is.
A recess appointment, so if the Senate is not in session to confirm your nominee, then you can go ahead and make a recess appointment. You're doing it while the Senate's in recess. And that person can remain in that office up until the end of the administration. And I believe that is what actually happened with Bolton. But when the Democrats did it, it's like, look, Bolton is a caustic, acerbic personality. We don't think he should be at the UN, but they didn't do it. I don't think anyone has had it done as a blanket policy. Let's hold up ambassadors, judges, just to be disruptive about it. Because, in the past, the opposition party still wanted the country to succeed. And I'm not sure that's the case now.
Yeah, it really seems like it's such a little, it's like a bunch of kids in the playground. You really don't care if the city goes down while you're wrestling over the sandbox. I mean, it's almost like it's a. I listen to two people on, of course, my right wing gang that's around me on Sunday morning. That's another story. But I turn on Face the Nation. What are you watching that for? It's all communist dribble or whatever. And I said, can I just like listen here for a while, guys? Go do what you want to do. So they had the lady senator from New York, who is pretty useless. How do we get to this part? I'm going to say, Wayne, there's some, there is a discipline in our system, or there used to be, that when you ran for whatever job you ran for, be it mayor, governor, president, maybe not senator, because nobody ever, you never were forced to add your stuff up. But in those jobs, if you wanted to have, 9 million social programs in Illinois, you either had to go borrow the dough, which people didn't really like all that much, or you had to raise the taxes, which people absolutely didn't like. So you were forced to essentially sell your program to the point where, you had to make it worthwhile for people to pay more because they're going to get more. And, sometimes you were successful, sometimes you weren't. But it seems like we've gone on this presidential job, or the Washington people, we've added, through various and sundry not independent Federal Reserve people, Janet Yellen, Bernanke, these people, the idea now we're just going to print it and we're just going to hand it out. To me, that not whether it's Democrat or Republican, I don't care. That's removed an amazing discipline from the system. We're not talking about, for a war that started yesterday through nobody's fault. I would roll with that a little bit too, knowing it was temporary, knowing there was a price to be paid for it at the end. But this routine now, they're very comfortable getting 40%, maybe 25 to 30% funded by just printing money. And I don't know if these people have ever had an economics course, but that adds a certain lack of discipline. Anyway, the lady from New York is like, what are you talking about? We've got the dough. These are all investments. In their own mind, printing $1 trillion for stuff, if it's their programs, their right stuff, we're going to get way more than $1 trillion in return, so it's a good deal. Well, that's interesting, but it's not very rigorous. It's like Janet Yellen saying, oh, no, we're going to get every penny back on this, and plus in spades, because look at the investments we're making and look at the return we're going to get on the investment. And, well, by the way, this is like Hoover Dam. We're going to spend $20 million on a thing, and 100 years from now, it's going to be worth $20 million a year in electricity. It's really easy to say that. It's quite another to make it actually work. That was this lady's story.
What still shocks me is to hear programs that are being put through that are in the trillions of dollars. To me, the word trillion is like, well, yeah, I remember when they said that the total debt is, in the trillions. But now they're talking about, we want this $2.3 trillion bill to do such and such. It reminds me of when Everett Dirksen used to say, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon it adds up to real money.
Yeah.
But I think even a trillion would have said, wait a minute here, trillion, what are we talking about? That's a lot of money.
When did
you say it's because they're just printing it, and, any student of history knows what happens. The Weimar Republic of Germany failed because of exactly that policy. It was not hyperbole that people were taking real barrels full of German Reichs to the store to buy a loaf of bread. That actually was the case because of the hyperinflation.
What is the history? I love it when you're on, because I can ask you these kinds of questions. In Illinois, is basically as bleeped up as Illinois is. At least, I think, I couldn't give you a chapter and verse on this, but Senator Matt Murphy would say that, he goes, one of the things we do have in Illinois is we have, Matty, what did he say? Was it one subject, one bill, or something like that? Where he goes, yeah, we actually pass all kinds of bills, even though we're fighting. Because
they're not supposed to cram in the five hidden agenda items beneath, page 500 of a bill. It's supposed to be one bill at a time covering one subject.
Was it always like that in Washington, where there's a million different things that committees have passed, or they're just waiting for, quote, a bill, and then all of a sudden one comes walking through and you attach all this stuff to it? When did that start?
Well, now we get to the issue that some presidents had to want. Clinton had the line item veto, but then they got rid of it again. This is how they put in pork. It's called earmarking, whatever. There are all kinds of names for it. But, somebody wants to get their pet project. I want the national park up in my state, I want it expanded, or I want part of it sold off. And this is where you get into the salami making a process in Congress. And pork, in one way or another, even with the line item veto, pork has always been in these bills submitted in Congress. So you got the Ways and Means Committee and the Appropriations Committee. This is where all this stuff goes on.
Well, they'll say something like, here is bills coming through, and they'll say, well, this particular piece has bipartisan approval, but they never just pull that piece out and pass it separately. Why is that? Because you're trying to attach stuff to it. Is that the idea?
Yeah. And this is where, getting back to my first point, I don't see these people that are in the news all the time. Marjorie Taylor, of course, Taylor Greene was taken off her committees, but you know, the Gosars, the Matt Gaetzes, the Cawthorns, and all these other characters, I don't even ever hear them doing anything, even in a committee, to get something for their district. And by and large, their districts are extremely poor. They have high unemployment. So what are they bringing home? I don't see anything at this point in time. Marjorie Taylor Greene, her district is Northwest Georgia. This is where Dalton Carpet and, you know, they were big manufacturing, and so they're making carpets and textiles, and all that industry is gone. So I don't see her doing anything for this very impoverished part of Georgia.
Wayne, we have a few minutes left. We have a couple of minutes left, but I want to get your opinion on this, the China situation. Obviously, more than a 2-minute conversation, but the second part of the Face the Nation was Ted Cruz, and he's lambasting Biden on being weak for Putin and weak against China and blah. And since we've been doing the show, however many years it's been, this China situation, if you're president, has to be the most difficult one to deal with, because some people are making a fortune over there and some people are being stolen from over there. I mean, and both of those people are your constituents. I mean, do you stop people from selling coke over there to punish the Chinese for stealing Bill Gates' stuff? I mean, the guy was pretty much lambasted Biden as being, and I am no Biden fan. I mean, I think his time was 20 years ago, if he had a time. But I'm just saying, but the this lambasting of your what exactly do people like Ted Cruz want? Do they want us to bomb every Chinese ship between Formosa or Taiwan? And I mean, what are they doing? What exactly do they expect us to do? Do they want us to nuke these people? I mean, I understand that China is a very no good in a country. To take a word out of Rocky and Bullwinkle, but I'm not sure what exactly tomorrow we can do about it. Do they have any kind of solution, or do they just shoot off their mouth?
Well, Cruz, not a day goes by where he's not saying something outrageous about something, whether he's going attacking Big Bird on Sesame Street or some other nonsense. He thinks that if Trump, for one reason or another, decides not to run, he has a shot at the Republican nomination, and so do about 30 others in that party.
Is there anybody in there who we actually would like?
I don't see first of all, any member of the Senate or House who supported that January 6th insurrection, having covered the Congress, that literally made me sick to watch that day. You know, seeing bear spray actually hitting some of those oil paintings, these are priceless. The damage that was done, and apparently it's still going on. I see Debbie Dingell, her constituent office in Michigan, was broken into, and they trashed the things that were given to her husband, mementos to John Dingell. And remember, John Dingell's father served in the House also. So this is like going into the Kennedy Library up in Brookline, Massachusetts, and trashing a place and, you know, smashing furniture and breaking porcelain. I don't get it. And Cruz is part of that whole a problem. As with China, China likes the status quo. They're not. I don't think they're going to invade Taiwan, but if Taiwan makes a move to declare independence officially, then, you know, things could, they just want the status quo. Having been in Beijing and talking to senior officials there and then down in Guangzhou, they're fine with, the only thing is they were very upset to see Hong Kong, the demonstrations there, because what was going on? The protesters were affecting the status quo. So you think of China, think status quo, and anything that changes that, they start to squawk a lot louder.
Well, Wayne, I love having you back. We got a dash here, bud.
Yeah.
Love to have you back. We got a dash. Some interesting stuff. I mean, we you know, talk about the policy stuff here all the time, and sometimes, I mean, you know the nuts and bolts, Barry, but also sometimes it's very, very nice to go back and at least go through how all this stuff is supposed to work, I guess. Whenever they talk about the independence of the Office of the Budget, I'm going, one final question. Is anybody in Washington actually independent?
The one thing about Washington is I said the District of Columbia should be renamed the District of Confusion, because it always seems to work, even though it seems very confused there.
God. Well, take care of yourself, buddy. SPV is up 55. NASDAQ is up 219. They were up a little more earlier. I'll be right back. Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Well, and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 55. NASDAQ Futures up 217. And we have Mr. Russell Rhodes with us. I was just thinking, now when Russell becomes even a bigger mover and shaker in the world than he is, are we going to have to change the name to get to be a one-name status like Jack? Is he going to have to go to Russ instead of Russell?
Well, I would say Doc when I finished my PhD, but that one was taken a long time ago. I don't know. I'll think on it.
I think you got to go to Russ. That'll work.
Russ. No, I'm not right. You want to know why I'm Russell? You'll love this one. I grew up. I mean, grade school, high school, tons of little league teams and everything with Rusty McCarver, Tim's nephew. And I was always Russell, and he was always Rusty.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
I always thought Tim McCarver was one of the, seemed to be one of the most well-liked, intelligent guys around. I mean, I don't know if that's true, Matty, but it sure seems like it, doesn't it?
I didn't like him as a broadcaster, but he was a good player.
I thought he did a spectacular job on the Olympics.
He's an all around good guy. He went to my high school.
God,
the little league or the minor league stadium was named after him when I was hovering around the Double A team in Memphis back in the day.
Well, anybody that can go from their expertise being in baseball to doing a nice job in the Olympics shows that they're willing to do a lot of work on stuff.
Oh yeah.
He struck me as somebody, whether you like the voice or whatever, is willing to put in the time and the effort. So I was always a fan because of that, Matty. I don't know if that means I liked him as a broadcaster necessarily, but it's like Dan Dierdorf. When Dan decided he wanted to be a broadcaster, he went off and did hockey for a couple of years because he just didn't want to rely on his football knowledge. When people do stuff like that, I'm very impressed, just saying.
Challenging yourself.
Yes. And, it's pretty rare, Russell. I mean,
I know it is.
You do that, but there's not a whole hell of a lot. And it's probably a little out of bounds. But do your kids understand the drive you have? Do they have the same?
They have no interest whatsoever in what I do.
Really?
Which is really funny. And when I have undergrads in college, who are very enthusiastic about the market and stuff, they're absolutely shocked when they hear that one. But both of them, kids, I wouldn't want to go back to high school to save my life with the amount of work that gets thrown at them now. And they both do a great job of keeping up with it, and I guess they get a little bit of it from me.
Well, there you go. I think they probably get more from you than you think.
I think probably, especially when they're verbally jarring with me. They definitely picked up on some stuff.
Well, all of a sudden you sit there and go, I've created myself. What a mistake. But, I mean, I think they pick up the morals. They pick up all the other stuff. They pick up the fact that you're nice to people. I mean, that stuff, I think, wears in there, even if their job is to challenge parents. I mean, right? That is the job, I guess. Well, we all
and I have taught them that you can get away with anything once.
Yeah, I know
that Ted Bundy guy. If he'd just done it once,
one of the when I was a janitor in the I was a janitor at Chicago Public Schools, and this one guy named Ellie Walker. Now, he had been a football player and big guy, real nice guy, and he's got a teenage son that he was the usual thing, and he says to me, why can't I explain to this kid that I was his age once? He thinks he's so slick. Doesn't he realize I did all the same stuff? And I'll tell you what, I did it a lot better. He's not even good at it, as he says to me. He goes, I was much better. I was a much better challenge for my dad. I was much sneakier. This kid's not even good at it.
I remember my father, who blew up the Kim lab at Central High in Memphis, I remember one Thanksgiving shortly after my mom had died, he told my sister and I how disappointed he was and how little trouble we got into. I'm like, oh my. Apparently he only remembers the good stuff, and we'll leave it at that. But yeah, she and I just looked at each other like, are you kidding with me? Oh, well.
All right, so Russell, is our 3.5 and 4-point moves in the VIX and 900-point moves in the Dow a sign of a healthy market?
The VIX part is, I think, part of what we got was a little bit of whiplash that you get around holidays because of the way that VIX is calculated using calendar days. And you had to go back several years, regardless of what the S&P 500 did on the Wednesday before and the Friday after Thanksgiving. VIX was always down just before Thanksgiving and was always up right afterwards. So we felt a bit of that last Friday. And I think that's why a lot of people didn't get overly upset. A lot of people that understand VIX didn't get overly upset about the move in VIX. And also because the futures kind of indicated that it was being overdone to the upside as well. But I think we're all on edge. nobody wants to, you know, I had to help predict what's going to happen in 2022 for the Kelley School, and I think it's because nobody else wanted to do it.
By the way, his Kelley School wasn't named after Notre Dame coach Kelley, who just fled.
It was not named after LSU coach Kelley.
Yeah, good. Just saying.
So, I wasn't going to rub that one. I wasn't even going to bring that one up with you guys today.
Did you hear what the AD said?
No. Well, he said we're going to be fine without him.
Well, he said, I am very happy he didn't give me a chance to match.
Mm-hmm.
You saw that, Betty, did you?
I didn't see the very happy part. I saw that he said that Kelley never gave him an opportunity to match.
And then another tweet, he said, I'm happy for that, or something along those lines.
Well, since you went in this direction, just real quick, you know, my school's arch rival, Oklahoma, who left Oklahoma State behind to go to the, or is leaving behind to go to the SEC, they sure got a taste of betrayal, didn't they?
Yeah.
Because not only did they lose him, but a bunch of his Southern California recruits are going with him.
Yeah. I mean, that's
Lincoln Riley. I mean, I would hate to be going into the SEC and be rebuilding a program.
that's what the backstory to this is, and I don't know where this is gonna play out. The backstory to this is LSU tried to hire the defensive coordinator from the guy at Cincinnati. What's his name, Eddie? The coach Cincinnati. I don't know, maybe he'll
figure defensive coordinator for Cincinnati? I have no idea.
The head coach.
The head coach.
Oh, it's Luke Fickle.
Well, yeah. The defense coordinator is this guy named Marcus Freeman. Okay, so he gets bid for lack of a better term, LSU. Kelley somehow says to Swarbrick, this is this guy we got to have. So the Irish outbid LSU for this defensive coordinator. And he's been at the Irish maybe a year or two. He's an incredible recruiter. He's a 35-year-old African-American guy that evidently is amazingly engaging to everybody. He's the real deal. And there's a reason why the Irish defense, all of a sudden, is this year. Last year they got a little better. This year, despite the problems they've had on offense, the defense is really as good as anybody's. Maybe better than that. And because even with that one kid not playing, Hamilton, who's projected third in the draft for the last four games, they've gotten better even without him. So this kid, or this guy, is also this incredible recruiter. And he supposedly, mm-hmm. Now it's for 2022 and 2023, has, you know, more 4- and 5-star recruits lined up for the Irish than they've ever had. Now, they haven't signed yet because we haven't had the national days or anything, but they're all headed towards South Bend, allegedly. So now the big thing is, all right, is Kelley going to make a move for this guy and now outbid what he bid for him at South Bend and take him down to LSU with him? But now this guy also is considered head coach material in a year or two, which the Irish probably don't have any problem with, and they're probably going to interview him for their job, actually. So now this is now the real big intrigue. So if this guy goes to LSU, all of a sudden all the advancements that the Irish have made in the recruiting are probably going to head to Baton Rouge. So I don't think anybody, the people coming in, give a crap about Kelley. I mean, I don't think he ever was that warm and fuzzy. But his defensive coordinator evidently is. So that's where the buzz is now. I don't think anybody, I mean, I think for most people with Kelley, don't let the door hit you in the ass. I mean, that's my attitude. But, that's where I'm at. Did you see the deal the guy from Oklahoma?
No.
The alleged deal. No, this is a source that he's getting $110 million.
I saw what they're giving him. I saw that part.
So if somebody gives you, just, I mean, you're an intelligent dude, know this stuff more than me. If somebody says, as part of your deal to move to Indiana, I mean, your house is worth $1 million in whatever suburb you're in, I'll give you $2 million.
Yeah, they gave. Yeah.
What is that?
And they offered all of this to him on Sunday morning. After they lost.
Okay. Yes. So what is the deal?
He didn't know Saturday night he was going to do this.
All right. So how do you handle that? Can you put $1 million on your, or $2 million on your $1 million house as the purchase price, or does the extra million have to be considered ordinary income? Because it's
such, I think, isn't it a capital gain?
Well, but if it's clearly way above it's any sort of real,
it's a capital gain, man. It's a tax avoidance thing. If you think about it, it saves him the trouble of selling the house. But I wonder if USC can write off the loss, because they're going to have to turn around and sell it at a loss.
I'm sure.
I wonder if it's
sure
a
they
double
feel
tax
they can. Now, my question is, if I took taxes when I was a senior in college, that was a while ago. I don't think, Russell, that the let's put it this way, the spirit of the tax law is, how much is that car worth? $10,000. I'll give you $300,000. I think the $290,000 is ordinary income.
Well, I think on that, but on the other, I mean, really, on the other side of the, I think when you sell your car, that's not like a long-term investment. But I feel like when you buy and sell your house,
but it's still,
I don't know. I really don't know.
I don't either. I'm going to say
I've never had that situation. Where,
no, me neither.
I've always gotten out a little bit better. The house I'm in right now is the first time that it looks like I'm going to get out a lot better. So I've never really had to deal with
that. By the time you get done, if you ever indexed it, you might not, with the inflation the way it's going, but that's another
story. Oh, you're such a buzzkill.
Well, I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah.
Your buddy Weston.
No, that's a good question around that. As far as I keep wanting to call him my dissertation chair's name because they're very similar. Lincoln Riley. Great for him. Here's another thing, another reason. If I were given the choice between coaching in Oklahoma or University of Southern California, 5 years ago I would have picked Oklahoma. Now I would pick USC. And I want to tell you, this name, image, likeness thing is going to benefit some certain schools more than others. And there's no question in my mind, there are more opportunities for a USC football player to make money doing a car advertisement or something like that than there are in Oklahoma.
Well, in South Bend, the Irish offensive line is settling for free pizza on their pizza night out. That's not exactly in Chicago.
Yeah, no,
I think they can do better now.
My office is at the IUPUI campus, and some of the Olympic sport athletes have gotten like little deals with like a local restaurant or whatever. And I have a funny feeling that there's not a whole lot of dollars involved in it, but it's like a nice to have for doing very little.
Well, yeah, I don't know if you listened to Shifting Bag. Did you listen to your two heroes yesterday, Janet and Jay?
No, I'm in the. I'm there. Other than talking to you, I'm pretty much sequestered in writing something that's got a due date on it very soon. I saw like one headline out of it, and that was it.
Don't tell me this is your thesis where we actually get to call you a doctor.
2 weeks.
It's going to be done?
Yep.
Do you need a proofreader?
Everything is scheduled and all that. I've just got a handful of things that need to get done. I'm very, very close.
Okay, so here's the PhD professor after a bazillion...
Yeah.
A bazillion,
no, I can't say that.
All right, but...
You got me in trouble there, because if you actually put PhD after your name and you don't have it, it's plagiarism. It actually falls under the plagiarism. Don't get me in trouble when I'm so close.
Now, we know somebody does that all the time.
I'm not John Belushi. I don't want to waste 8 years of my life.
Well, we know somebody who does that. Anyway.
They don't put PhD.
Soon to be PhD.
My question is, just like a freshman in history class at Marist High School, like I was, you do your term paper right when you get up against the deadline.
Yeah.
So people don't change.
That is not exactly what's going on right now.
Okay.
I've got about 3 paragraphs to write and I'm done.
All right, but I'm just saying it's males don't change. You still do it when it's a deadline, right? How many lawyers have you ever dealt with?
Let's just say it would have cost me another semester of tuition if I didn't finish by next Friday.
Oh, okay.
So, well, yeah.
Are we going to celebrate?
If you want to.
Sure.
Party hats and cupcakes.
Yeah, there you go. I don't know if I'm ready
for
the party yet.
I'll bring cupcakes to the class.
Oh, God, you probably lace them with something.
That would be a fun show.
God. Anywho. anyway, the story is, I have this, as you know, I have sort of a roadmap of where all this is heading, and I just hope that somebody crosses out my roadmap, because I don't want to go where my roadmap says we're heading in terms of this inflation and what I think it's going to take to turn the bus around. We're inching towards realization that it's actually here, Russell, but somehow we're still on the program that, don't worry, a quarter point move next February is going to fix it all. When is that going to change? Because clearly, in my mind, that is not a solution.
No, it's definitely not. No. The resolution of all of this is going to be like a massive, painful relocation for a lot of people and a lot of industries like we had in the 70s. That's what's coming.
Well, what?
It's unfortunate, but that's what it is. And you were a little bit older than I was in the 70s, but I have always been so number-focused. I realized what was going on. But it's just that, we right now we're kind of used to $2 to $3 gas. We're going to suddenly be used to $4 to $5 gas.
Well, I think we're just not the lifestyle changes that...
I think that's going to be... funny, I had a long... When I was supposed to be working on my dissertation yesterday, I ended up having a long conversation with one of my counterparts that worked at one of the exchanges. And we felt like the combination of inflation, the supply chain issues, which are not going away. I drove by a BMW dealership in Indiana yesterday that had 6 cars.
Well, you know what? Come on up here to 159th Street. The BMW dealership, people in Illinois or the South Side mustn't like him. That guy must have 400 cars.
I think there's a disconnect between where they're actually getting, because when I get outside of Chicago, it looks very different.
Chevy and Ford.
The domestic car makers have tons of cars. It's the foreign ones.
Totally mirror image of here. You drive down 159th Street where there's every car dealership in the world. Chevy, nothing. Ford, nothing. Jeep, not very much. All of a sudden, Lexus packed. BMW packed. Mercedes packed.
Well, that means you and I are okay for our new car.
Yeah, I'm ready. Where's my new pick-me-up? Hey,
One other thing on the car thing, and then I do want to... We've got to take my kid's car in to get repaired, and the dealership couldn't give us a loaner because they sold all their loaners.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are you taking it to a dealership to get repaired for anyways? I hope it's under warranty.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
What we were talking about before, I think that it's very possible with inflation, supply chain issues where we're not spoiled and we're not getting things instantaneously like we used to, and the higher cost of energy, don't be surprised if we become a little bit more Europe-like, where we suddenly have realized that we just don't need as much crap as we have.
I think some people are definitely coming to that, but I mean...
I think it's a combination of economics and just social.
Well, I think there's a couple of things that really stand out more for, I'm going to say, I won't say more for me than for most people, because the difference is, I think, Russell, is that some of us, you can wander through your day and just meet the people that you meet, and a lot of times you can fall into this trap where the only people you meet are people just like you in terms of the same socioeconomic class, same everything like that. Mm-hmm. And you, even though I think most people care about other people, matter of fact, care a lot about other people, if it's not sort of in your face and you don't quite follow somebody else's path or a few other people's path and different. I mean, I've been very lucky. One is my personality. I like people from all different walks of life. And I think that, I don't know how to drill that into me, but my parents were like that. But I just happen to have friends in virtually every different economic strata. The people I talk to, like, on a weekly basis, you know, not just once a year. And I'm very not aware, maybe as some, but of the different issues people have. And for some reason, because at PTI, we always paid for people's medical and stuff here. I've always had my finger kind of on the pulse of that part of the economy. And one of the biggest lies, in my opinion, that's ever been told is this inflation number for the last 20 years. Because most of the people who write and talk on TV and wherever have their hospitalization paid for, the idea of how much it's gone up in the last 20 years is totally a shock to them. They never look at the bill. They never pay it. They don't know. They don't care. Now, we at PTI, we're paying it for people. I mean, when I started on a trading floor, I think it was the end of 80. Might have been early 81, somewhere so long ago. All I had to do was be a market maker at First Stop, and I got my hospitalization through them. I could have done 10 contracts a month, which would have been 10 bucks. Mm-hmm. And they paid for my hospitalization. And it was a Cadillac Blue Cross. I don't even know that term back then. And when I first hired my first clerk, he had a family, and it was $100 a month.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have totally lost that piece that this inflation number has been a flat out lie for two or three decades. We never included. It's been 20% of the economy, and it's 6% of the number. I mean, there's a guy here who works in the building. He's at the right on the you know, the 50-some thousand dollar number, I'm going to guess. I don't know what the guy makes, but because what he tells me, he splits his insurance with the building. But he's got this, you know, $12,000 or $13,000 family deductible. If somebody in the family gets sick, in reality, Russell, the man has no insurance for the first $13,000. So
yeah,
if he has to go somewhere, his wife had a bad stomach issue a few weeks ago, unfortunately, it ended up being nothing. But he says, I almost had to bring an emergency room. He goes, that'll be $5,000. He goes, I don't have $5,000. He goes, how the hell can it be $5,000 for an hour? Or it might be $7,000. I mean, we're not even on the planet when we talk about the real inflation number. But now we're getting a real number on top of it. You know,
right.
And when we don't, now if you put education in the first part too, you're really going to stick it where the sun don't shine, right? Because I did a study on that, on both higher education, which is up three times in the last 20 years, and the CPI is up 0.5%. Not 0.5%, 50%. So instead of 50%, it's 300%. Well, that's a difference. And if you look at, in Illinois, I couldn't get all every other state, so I'm probably being high here. I looked at local taxes, which are, what, 55% education, correct? In Illinois, in the last 20 years, local taxes are up three times, or 2.85. So, I mean, we're already on top. Now we're dropping what you and I would consider regular 70s inflation on top of that mess.
Yes.
And I don't see how you get there from here. I mean, but a part of this is everything, you know, as you and I know, everything you do, the idea of going from a full pension system for workers to this 401k plan, had all kinds of, you know, good reasons for it, right? But, as a matter of fact, I think a lot of really good reasons for it, you know, and it's probably a better system than the old system. But now all of a sudden you've taken the fixed income portion out of it. I mean, nobody can be, you should be able to have to take no risk whatsoever. You and your wife start working when you're 25, or hopefully you work before that, but you're married at 25, you put, you know, a couple hundred hours a week or a month in this thing, you should be making 3%. And if you do the math, if you're making 3% risk-free till the time you shouldn't have to care where a stock is, even though that's what I do for a living. I mean, I love buying a stock and have it go up. I mean, I love, you know, doing an option, doing it's covered right and picking the spot where the stock goes and making money on both sides. I mean, I love doing that, you know, when it happens. But the idea that you should have to be in the market to have your money work for you is absolutely ass backwards. You should, if you're happy with 3.5%, you should be able to get that risk free. That's what banks are for. To take your 3.5%, charge somebody else seven who's got a good idea on a project or a building or whatever, and they make the money in the middle, and everybody should be happy. But somehow or another, we don't want to do that anymore. We're not going to give anybody any money. So we force everybody into the stock market. And they'll tell you right on TV, every bump on TV, Kramer, everybody, you got no business in the bank, you got to be in the market. Well, now all of a sudden, the market's in trouble because it's so friggin' high, and now we got inflation out the behind, and now at some point here, the Fed's going to have to pull back. Guess what? Now what happens? There isn't a politician on earth that is going to, it wants to be there when this thing, I mean, and Trump was all, I mean, he graded his whole presidency on the stock market. It's all about whether we can keep everybody now who has been disdained from having just a regular risk-free account like you should have to have or should be able to have, is now in the market. So now the wailing and gnashing of teeth we're going to get from a normal correction is something that should never be this big. Russell, where am I wrong here? I'm talking too much.
No, you're not wrong at all. And the thing is, the people that probably need the money the most are going to be the last ones to panic out of the market. They're going to be the ones that really do get hurt by this.
Well, you can't, I don't think you want to tell me. You aren't even writing, but the movement in the bonds last Wednesday, Friday, because we didn't trade Thursday, was absolutely indicative to me that there was inside information that the announcement on Monday was going to be that the Fed, because of this new Omicron virus, which is a new variant, is going to cause them to delay the taper. So when he went into Congress yesterday and said, oh, no, we might pull the taper up, that was a tremendous flip in 24 hours from him. Right?
Yeah. No, and you think the bonds, you think some people knew what was in the speech?
Yeah.
I've been at some of those things where the Fed guys show up and they're actually given a notebook that nobody is supposed to have opened with the speech in it. But somebody had to put it in there.
Yeah. Somebody had to put SP futures up 55, NASDAQ futures up 220. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe, just from my web on the board. SP futures up 57. NASDAQ futures up 218. NASDAQ was up a little higher earlier, but we're hanging in there pretty good after a big down day yesterday. little bit uneven down day, but down day nonetheless. Dow futures up 285. Individual stocks, Apple up three. Apple was up like $4 yesterday. There's a huge, I don't know what's going on at Apple, what they're going to come out with, but whatever it is, people are loving that stock even yesterday. When you're, we've got the DAX up. One that's down today is this, Salesforce, but it was down 30 last night. It's only down 14, so it's coming back pretty good. Trading 271, as they missed on just about everything. DAX up 274, 1.8%. FTSE up 94, 1.3%. And then the DAX was the big leader down yesterday. They're one that's up the most today. CAC around up 121, 1.8. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 113.4%. Shanghai up 13.4%. Hang Seng up 183.8%. So neither Nikkei or the Hang Seng is making back anywhere near as much as they lost the day before. Shanghai, however, was flat the day before, so they're actually up. Again, kind of crazy. Dow was down 652. Dow's been taking a hit more than anybody else. They were down 900 on Friday. S&P down 88 yesterday. NASDAQ down 245. So it's 1.9%, 1.9%, and NASDAQ was only down 1.6, and they're almost made all that back today. We're up to 222. So it's hard to keep, you need a scorecard here, Matty, for God's sake. 10-year bond up 3/32, 1.48. The bund up 1/32, minus 0.32. Japan up 1 basis point, a positive 0.07. I'm never going to get the, bonds used to trade in 30 seconds, so it's not just me being a total idiot. Oil up $1.68, 67.86, but still way down from the 84, 85 hour top it was maybe 3 weeks ago. Brent up 184, 71.07. Natural gas down 14 cents, 4.42. I would not have guessed that ever. But it was $6 not very long ago. RBOB up 4 cents, 198. It's a good thing I'm not a natural gas trader, man. I'd be carried out feet first, as we used to say. Gold up 11.80, 17.88. Silver up 13 cents, 22.90. Copper up 2 cents, 4.30. Bitcoin up to 213 to 57,693. This thing's been pretty quiet between pretty much 56.5 and 59.5 for the past few weeks. Anybody got for us traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start here on a Wednesday morning. We had an earlier crash on the Bishop Port at 130th Street, but that's all clear, so that's good news. No issues coming in on the Ryan or I-57 either, although traffic is building heavily throughout the area. We also have some rain in the area that's causing a bit of a slowdown. Stevenson and Eisenhower, no accidents to report. Same for the Edens and Kennedy, but some slow traffic volumes as people are heading into downtown. Off the expressways, northwest suburbs, Norwood Avenue at Baker Drive, there is a crash. And then out west, in Wheaton, Roosevelt Road at CR21, which is Fabian Parkway, there is a crash. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, rain early, and then we should see some partly cloudy skies later on and a high of 49. Right now it's overcast and 43 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 84 today. Right now it's clear and 52. In sports, quiet night last night. Bulls and Blackhawks were both off. Bulls are at the Knicks tomorrow. Blackhawks are at the Washington Capitals tomorrow. Suns played last night. They beat the Warriors 104-96. Coyotes lost to the Wild 5-2. College hoops, Big Ten ACC Challenge. Saw Northwestern go to Winston-Salem, North Carolina, played Wake Forest. It was a back-and-forth game. Northwestern had their chances, but they came up just short, losing 77-73. But that's just one of two Big Ten losses so far, as the Big Ten has dominated the ACC throughout the first 2 days, leading 6-2, with the final six games tonight to close out their annual series. Chief.
So you want to, here's the quote here, it's a little lengthy, but from your buddy Brady Quinn, Matty. You like him as an announcer, don't you?
Yeah, I think he's solid. He does pre and post game, and he's been in the booth a little bit, mostly for college.
Yeah, he was doing, he's a big buddy of my mother's cousin who taught him in like four different grades. And what's he from, Dublin?
Dublin, Ohio, yeah. Sounds right to me, yeah.
That's where she teaches, and she knows all these people. I mean, every guy who was, but she said for him going to Notre Dame and not going to Ohio State was a big deal. His family almost had a move because Ohio State wanted him. Brian Kelly might feel that he has a better chance to win a national championship at LSU, but the irony of it is his team could literally be playing for one this year, really the next 2 years. They have two top five recruiting classes right now. He's leading all of that. I think the way he did it was more about his ego and how he feels like he was treated at times at Notre Dame. the end of the day, you don't leave the way he did, literally out on the road recruiting, leaving a recruit's house after the news broke, and having other coaches out there recruiting as well. You don't leave in a classless way like that after becoming the all-time winningest coach. Listen, there's more to it, and you want to do this in a kind of conniving way. He's leaving these players at least a chance to play in a New Year's Six game, and they may have a chance of playing for a national championship. I know we talk about the players opting out of bowl games because they have an injury risk, but this is entirely different. This is just a guy walking out. It's a classless, classless move. He doesn't win quick at LSU. In 3 or 4 years, we'll be looking back and laughing at this. What do you think of that? It's your buddy Brady.
I agree with him. But I also think, you know, like you said, a lot of people in South Bend didn't like Kelly, and I think he felt that and didn't like them. And I think when he got an opportunity, he said, I'm out of here. Screw this place.
Yeah.
And so you can't blame people for doing that either. People have a right to work wherever they want.
Boy, $110 million guaranteed is a lot of dough.
Yeah, but I bet if he went back to Notre Dame, they would have found a way to come close to matching that.
I don't know. Not after Charlie Rice.
They might have. By the way, hey, Matt, this will scare you. When I got to my hotel, I was thinking about you last night.
Yes.
I'm still hoteling it in Indianapolis, and there's a giant Big Ten flag on the top of the high-rise next to me.
Yeah, so.
Like, why is that up there?
That's right. So the Big Ten Championship for football is on Saturday night, and it's number 2 Michigan with everything on the line, because not only is a Big Ten Championship on the line, but if they win, they're going to be in the playoff. They'll take on number 13 Iowa, who is 10-2, one game behind. So if Iowa wins, they'll win a Big Ten championship, and they'll likely go to the Rose Bowl, because with 2 losses, they won't get into the playoff. So it's a big game for both teams. It's even bigger for Michigan. And last time Iowa was in 2015, and I went, and it was great. Great time and a lot of fun. I've talked about it before. So I was looking to go again this year. The tickets are starting at $300 a piece on the secondary market, because the game sold out so far in advance, because Michigan's never been in the Big Ten championship game before. So they're bringing a ton of people, and then Iowa always travels well, so they're bringing a ton of people as well. And I'm like, man, if I can get down to, you know, $100 a ticket, I would consider it, but $300 a ticket, no way. So I'm debating on whether I'm going to go or not.
My advice would be to always wait till, of course, not, actually, I might have to strike this from the show. In my experience, you just go down there and you buy a ticket, but I don't know, can you do that anymore?
Of course you can.
How do you do it? There are no tickets.
Yeah, well, they're digital. They're still tickets. You just go and you buy it from someone, and they transfer to your
phone. Stick a finger in the air.
All right. Well, I used to be very good at that. So my advice would be to book a room in Russell's place, go down there and look for the tickets, and if you don't get one, you run back over and you watch the game on TV.
Well, the thing is so we have a place to stay. That's already lined up for free. So we're good there because we have friends and family in Carmel, which is a suburb of Indianapolis. That
it would be Carmel.
Everyone seems to live in. So we're good there. If it was just me, or if it was me and a bunch of guys, we would absolutely do that, because I've done that before. Go without a ticket, have fun at the bars, try to get a ticket at the last minute. If you don't, no big deal. If you do, great, you go to the game. With a pregnant wife, that's not exactly the game plan that they're stoked about. So they're like, I want everything has to be planned perfectly. We have to have everything set up. I can't have any sort of audibles, and that's where I'm at.
Wait a minute, she was like that before she was pregnant.
Well, I think a lot of women in general are like that, but and that's not a knock.
No, it's just they're not the swashbuckler type approach,
right? So yeah, so I would put our chances of going right now at about 30%. So we'll see.
So I mean, like, if we went, we would be going for the adventure wherever it led.
Exactly. And I would have no problem if we didn't get in, because it'd be fun tailgating all day and then watch the game at the bar. That'd be just as fun, but she can't drink, so that's not that fun to her.
No. No. Well, so, yeah, it's a... Well, she could... She wants to watch it with you. I get it. You know, I mean...
Yeah, so it's one of those things. I'm going to kind of wait it out and see if... I'm hoping that... You know, people... The game sold out supposedly back in August. So you had Penn State people buying tickets, you had Michigan State people, certainly Ohio State, a lot of these schools that thought they might be in it. And they're the ones selling these tickets on the secondary market, and they're jacking them way up. And I'm hoping that they get a little panicky come Friday, and I can get something for more reasonable.
Well, if you knew somebody in Columbus, I bet there's a lot there.
Yeah, exactly. So,
well, are you going to be there for the weekend, Russell, or are you coming home?
Oh, I'll be home.
Right.
I never stay here for the weekend.
Well, I was saying that particular weekend.
I don't move into my apartment until until next month.
Oh, okay.
So when I come here, I have to pay him at home.
Okay. All right, so let's kind of, if you don't mind, let's kick back to what we're talking about, is that the Fed is, I don't really envy their job here. I mean, at some point they got to knock out this inflation, and yet how are they going to do that without knocking the market down when they're the ones that pumped it up? I mean, as of right now today, they are almost in an emergency war recession, $120 billion a month into the money supply. That's almost that's like the highest it ever got in the 60s and 70s in the worst inflation to date. I guess maybe after World War II was worse for a little while, but I don't know how they all of a sudden start telling people that, you know, we could be going to like 7% interest rates. The message is so unpalatable that they don't want to give it, but that is the where they're going, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I mean, they, and you got a feel for the guys that are the Janet and Powell that they put out there, but they really are inheriting like 30 years worth of stuff. And Janet's responsible for some of it, but I don't think Powell, you know, I think maybe Powell showed up and they said the first, when you get elected president, the first time you get debriefed, it takes 5 years off your life. I wonder if the same thing happened to Powell when he got into the job.
Well, when he got into the job, he started doing the taper right away. And he saw the reaction in the market. Then he was basically, you know, the hook went around his neck and dragged him over to the White House. And I still remember the picture of him coming out of the White House at the meeting with Trump and whoever else was the Treasury Secretary at the time. And he all of a sudden changed policy the next day, and he's never looked back. He's been amazingly expansionary. He basically was told, or waterboarded, or whatever happened to him, but look, we are running on a market up thing. Every time this thing's down, you pour money in and you pop it up. And that's, and we, you know, we've almost letting short-term politics, not almost, but to my opinion, we're using short-term politics affecting long-term economic growth. I mean, when Janet Yellen's talking about yesterday, you know, her this plan from the president is going to be accretive in the end. Come on, Russell. I mean, you know, Dutch Reagan's policy, they had to raise taxes again. That's why Bush had to raise taxes, because he had to raise them again from Reagan.
Because we got him into the, yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, Clinton sort of didn't have to but he sort of did, because we had a massive run up in the market and a subsequent collapse, and the people that made money had to pay through the nose. The people who lost money couldn't recover it, right? So you had a very, plus now you still got a $3,000 limit on what you can deduct. So there's a lot of people. I mean, the one person, lady I know that's a mortgage broker, somebody just got a second mortgage on a house to put it all in Bitcoin. All right, so say it's 50 grand. If he loses 40 of it in Bitcoin and the guy's 70 years old, at 3 grand a year, this dude better double his life, or he's not going to get there, right? I mean, there's all sorts of things that are again somebody who puts their money in the market and loses, you know. Yeah. So these guys, I mean, I can't. Is there any way on earth that Biden gets elected again if the market's down 20% by next November?
Throwing the help thing out the window. God no. I don't. I think if the election were held, if the election were held in 2022 for president, I think he'd have a hard time winning. So he's got to turn this thing around. But I think Reagan was in almost the exact same spot, you know, where he was having to make some tough choices or he was inheriting a pretty tough situation. And by the time 4 years got around, he was okay. And a lot can happen in the next 3 years. So not thinking about the help thing, he's still got time to turn this thing around, but I don't see it happening.
Well, he needs to turn it around, but any kind of normalcy in, say, the fixed income markets will erase this craziness in the stock market. Not in every stock. I mean, there's some stocks I think that'll be fine. They'll drop a little bit and they'll come right back. But there's a lot of stocks that are, you know, that are 50 times revenue and 100, 200 times earnings. I mean, you know, what if the country all gets better? I mean, I don't see, is Zoom going to double again? I don't know. I doubt it. could.
I think they're going to be hard pressed to double from here.
Yeah, and you know how much.
That's what it's really going to take if inflation really gets out, if that genie gets out of that bottle.
Well, and how much? And how much more than $460 can Lululemon go? I mean, nobody else can make sweatpants. I mean, are we talking about a 20-year firm here? I mean, you know, at some point, you know, Nike's going to get a competitor that doesn't use slave labor in China. That's people might actually care about. But a lot of it, this is just kind of crazy stuff, right? It's all across the board. But I don't see how this imbalance lasts much longer. I mean, I think it's starting to turn. Now, it's going to take a while. I'm sure I'll be early like I already have been. But what do you,
We're always early, but the thing you brought up when I first came on about how much VIX has been jerking around on very little market action, that is totally an indication that the market's on edge. And you could, and you could see, like, the thing snowballing lower on what you and I might consider minor news or news that everybody saw, we get another inflation number. Maybe we get an inflation number on Friday in the employment part. I think that's the first place a lot of people are looking now is, what is the average hourly earning or average hours worked as well? Because you would think that would be going up, with inflationary pressures as well. So it'll take one of those types of numbers and then it'll just, kind of be a waterfalling event because we never seem to just sell off on nothing other than overvaluation.
No, but that's tough because you still got to get it to the point where people have to sell. And we're pretty close to record margin debt. I don't know how big, it's hard for me to tell countrywide because I'm in this area and where all the exchanges used to be in Chicago that is a decimated almost like a war zone except there's no physical damage. We already had one big building that's been foreclosed. Do you think that is going to cause any kind of a ripple, or is it just we just take them one building at a time and not worry about it, Russell?
Oh, it's got to cause some sort of a ripple. It's going to work its way because they still securitize these things. You know, it's not like the owners of these buildings have bought them outright without some sort of leverage involved in it. And that works its way through the banking system. The banking system, has to clean that situation up once again, which doesn't it seem like real estate has been the every other catalyst for some time now?
Well, it's not necessarily the real
thing, but it'll be, there's no way that commercial real estate can continue to hold in.
No, but
my understanding was mall traffic was down like 28% Friday.
Yeah, it was.
And that combined with we don't need office space anymore?
Well, the computer sales on Monday were down from last year. It's the first time that's ever happened on Cyber Monday.
I'm not overly surprised either, and I think part of it, people do have extra cash right now, but I think they're not finding what they want to buy.
Well, if that's nominal, if it's down 1.4% nominal numbers, what's the real number? I mean, with the inflation numbers we know we have, Carl lobbied this thing the other day. I don't know if you got it too, but he claims he has a source. What was the big joke? The White House source, white whatever it was, the blooper. He claims that the last 2 months that the inflation has been 3% per month. The last 2 months. That's how fast stuff's running up. Now we're starting to see a drop down in oil and stuff this last couple of weeks. So maybe that will come back a little bit, but. I mean, he was just. I tell you what, I've gone into places where I look at the prices and they're up. You know, it's not. You know, really. Well, I like. I'm an Italian cook. Real good Italian sausage is now $3.50 to. It was $3.50 a pound, $3.79. Now it's $4.99. I mean, we're not talking about going to $4.02. I mean, we're not stopping at a 2% raise here in any of these places that I can see. But I just. You wonder where it's sort of heading for every man. I mean, what are we buying? Are we not? Is the stuff not available? Is the stuff too high? Is it we're just cutting back? I mean, you never really know unless you interview every person, do you, Russell? That's the beauty of economics. You never really know. A million decisions are made like every second, right?
Yeah, and I think there's just not enough stuff. I mean, I haven't really started stopping for everybody. But I think it, people aren't finding what they want, or they're being patient, or being more patient around it.
That's certainly, I think that's probably a possibility.
How much?
I mean, if you want to go out, I mean, is it possible to not go out and buy a shirt or sweater for, you know, your nephew or niece? I mean, I got to believe you can still do it. I mean, it can't be that bad.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'm sure you can do that. I went walking to a Macy's the weekend before Black Friday, and they had stuff everywhere in Macy's out of Norfolk. So, you know, the other thing with mall traffic, some of the smaller stores had shortened hours. They're like, you know, the mall's open till 9, they were closing at 6. And
Macy's just
part of that was for safety's sake because of the smash and grab stuff going on.
Yeah, all the stores on State Street seem to be closing earlier than normal too.
Yeah, how many Macy's are going to close after Christmas? Was it 12 or 9 they announced yesterday?
I'd have to look it up.
They're not telling you which 9 or 10. You sort of got to, you know, you got to wonder on this one. And
it says 10 to be announced in January.
Yeah, 10 to be announced in January. Macy's doesn't have any small stores, do they? They're all pretty big. I mean, they're not all like State Street, but the
Macy's I've been to is big.
Mall-sized department stores.
They're all good size. Question I want to ask you, Russell, is like this building over here. I don't sense the 2007, 2008, the mortgage loans pile on top of each other. I don't sense the leverage. I mean, there could be. That's why I'm asking you. It's not exactly my area, but everybody seems to think. I mean, John Flanagan, who comes on, he's our expert on commercial real estate and stuff. He says now that your holders of those properties are all insurance companies or big developers. And this group here, I think, is part of it's out of Canada, and the other one's an insurance company or something. I mean, so it's not like the building, you know, has a $250 million mortgage to, you know, First National Bank of Chicago or Continental or somebody. I mean, aren't they sort of spread around to these insurance companies and these people? That's what they do. They're like investment REITs and things. You don't see banks, I don't think, holding that kind of paper, do you?
No, I think it's a lot of different longer-term borrowers. I mean, I think pension funds hold, will put some money in these things, considering them somewhat of an inflation hedge, without realizing they were going to get hurt as everybody stopped leaving their house. I think is a permanent long-term thing. I got approached yesterday about going back to work for one of the exchanges and not one of the exchanges in Chicago, and they said, "Oh yeah, we just want you to work from home."
I mean,
hiring to work from home.
I think there's going to be some of that. I don't know. I'm just an old grumpy Southsider.
I think instead of being white collar versus blue collar, it's going to be the ability to work from home versus the ability not to work from home.
I have a feeling that someday when those Russell Rhodes guy becomes a head of an exchange and you show up for work, you're going to be just like me. Where the hell is everybody? Get them in here. If I'm here, you're here.
They get their work done.
Yeah. Let's kick that one around next week, buddy. Take care of yourself. You're coming home. You're not going to go to the game. Hopefully, just leave the key under the thing in case Maddie needs it if he goes down there. SP Futures up 54, NASDAQ Futures up 192. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.